if you're going to visit a listing and you tell them, oh, I'm bringing the superstar running back of the Miami Dolphins, we're going to see this. All of a sudden, you're going to have six different realtors show up. Their cousins, their uncles are going to bring jerseys. They're going to want to take pictures. Like it's really important to kind of be discreet and show that, your professionalism, and even go about signing NDAs if it's necessary, if it's a big enough name.
Welcome to Self Equity, the podcast that dives into the inspiring journeys of founders, entrepreneurs, athletes, and entertainers. I'm your host, Jolene Tepidino, authorized officer and team business manager for the Zellniger, Dorfman, Carr, and Heritage Group at UBS. Today, we're joined by Nick Green, a real estate advisor working across New York, Miami, and Boston, specializing in luxury and sports and entertainment clients. We talk about how athletes think about real estate and the decisions that separate those who build wealth from those who just spend it. Joining me as co-host today is Chris Bostick, financial advisor with the Zellniger, Dorfman, Carr, and Heritage Group.
Nick, great to see you. Thanks for joining us on our Self-Equity podcast today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate you.
So Nick, for those who may not know you, can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm Nick Green, based between New York, Boston, and Miami. I'm with Compass, a real estate company, and doing residential brokerage with a niche in sports and entertainment. I also advise for some companies across the sports and entertainment industry. Also working on a few things startup-wise, and kind of have my entrepreneurial hat on these days, and everything tied back into kind of the whole sports and entertainment and real estate worlds.
Can you tell us a bit about your journey that led you to your current role in real estate?
Yeah, it was a bit indirect. When the pandemic hit, I was doing architectural sales. I was pounding the pavement, trying to get on specifications for different construction projects throughout Manhattan and, quite frankly, throughout the world that were specified by Manhattan-based architects and designers. I was working for eight different manufacturers of commercial construction materials and bringing those materials into the offices of these top architects and designers with the hopes of being specified. In doing that, I would have to bring these samples of these materials in person in front of these architects and designers and present them and sell them on why they should use my product instead of the 10 other manufacturers of artwork, wall surfaces, flooring, carpet, just mass used commercial interior design finishes. I was doing that up until the pandemic hit. And then what I loved about the job was pounding the pavement and being in person and being in front of these top architects and designers. That quickly turned to Zoom. I had a friend of mine who had a team at Compass at the time who had been talking to me about for years about joining and how he thinks it'd be a good fit and should really think about doing real estate. Kind of finally wasn't enjoying as much what I was doing and thought about the pivot. So yeah, that got me over to the real estate side. I was actually in Florida at the time. I was part of the mass exodus out of New York. Ended up buying a place down in Miami. And I actually got my first real estate license in Florida to begin with.
So you mentioned the pivot. You go from architecture to now real estate. You mentioned that, you have this niche in kind of the athletes and entertainer space, similar to how we do. I'm interested to hear how you kind of got into that. What led you towards that? And how do you, create success in that area?
Yeah. So I've always been interested in sports. I was a big ski racer. Baseball player. My dad played college tennis, and so I grew up playing tennis. And I always played a ton of sports, and I just was obsessed with sports. So when I pivoted to real estate, I saw that we had like a sports and entertainment division at Compass, and that there was all these realtors who kind of called themselves specialists in sports and entertainment. And I just kind of found out what that is and was very intrigued by it. Realized that it's a lot about the relationships between players and agents and just different kind of tiers in the whole sports entertainment community where there's so many different relocations. So I was just intrigued by that and kind of dove right into it and started reaching out to my agency connections, some friends who were sports agents, and pretty much just offering my services. And if their players are getting drafted or traded or, switching teams in any capacity, telling them what I do now. And that's how it started.
You know, from our perspective, on the wealth management side, the athlete entertainer kind of fits into almost like a different bucket, right? You've got your traditional retiree, business owner, multi-generational family. Typically, most people, they're making little money and that's growing as they get older, and then all of a sudden they reach their retirement age and they've got a bucket of money that they can live on. It's kind of the opposite for athletes, right? They make a lot of their money early and then they've got a long runway for them to make this money last. So the wealth management becomes a little bit different, right? From a real estate perspective, how is it different working with athletes and entertainers versus working with just, regular person might be looking to buy a piece of real estate?
It's very different. I mean, there's so many nuances. I mean, the first being all the decision makers, including yourselves being one of them. The financial advisors definitely are a big part of the transaction. With the big sports agents, they're negotiating the marketing deals, the team deals, they're negotiating the big contracts, but they really lean on the client services managers, the people under them, to kind of worry about the day-to-day needs of these players who, for the big players, it seems it's like a full concierge experience, whether they want a restaurant reservation or whether they want, some flowers delivered, or if they need a helicopter, or then, any sort of ask. I've seen so many different asks that are very unique and nuanced. But real estate falls into that category of one of those asks that doesn't have to do anything with their marketing deals or with their, on-field deals. So that client services manager usually will put me in a group chat with the financial advisor, with the player, oftentimes including the significant other on that chat as well. And, just right there, then and there, you have, 3 to 5 decision makers on that group chat. Whereas a regular client of mine might just be, me and them directly, or me with their significant other. Right away, you have way more people making decisions and, educating all those people as well. So that's one of the nuances. There's many more, but I would say that's the initial one that kind of jumps out to me. Education, for sure, because I would say so many clients of mine in New York have transacted in real estate before, so they're kind of educated in it. They might own a home in another city, or might be on their second or third apartment, or this might be their first purchase, but they've done 6 other rentals, and they've signed a lease before. Whereas some of these athletes that get referred across my desk, they might be fresh out of college and, never had to kind of deal with anything themselves on the real estate side. So education is another big difference. Decision makers, education, and then a third being the nuances of the time and the duration of how much time they're going to be spending in that city. Whereas you and I might be signing a 12-month lease or buying a home for a long time to live there to relocate our families. These athletes, they might be on their league minimum deal or might have a very short-term contract or even might be an undrafted free agent who's trying to make the team. And so you have to find those buildings and those landlords that are player-friendly that can, have that flexibility of doing a short-term lease or have that kind of flexibility for those guys who might not be around that long and might be going to another city. So it's that can be tough because you could spend a lot of time trying to find a place, and you find a place and a week later they find out they're going somewhere else. And so that actually just happened with the Yankees player I was working with, and spent a good amount of time with them and met their family and touring properties, found a good property, ready to sign a lease, and all of a sudden, oh, going to another team. There's a never a dull moment, but those are some of the nuances.
What you do is important. From my experience, So it's kind of a hidden thing that most people don't understand about athletes is where do you stay, right? Most people kind of assume that teams put people up or put the players up and they don't recognize that there's not really a lot of help there. And you're breaking leases, you're doing all these different things where it's important to have those relationships. So I know it's no easy feat. How much do you see kind of like agents or, you know, these concierge people that are helping the players, how much do you see them leaning on you for perspective on whether or not a player should be looking to rent or should be looking to buy, you know, depending on what city they're in?
Yeah, it's a good question. Often they have some sort of idea. Often they've kind of, you know, especially the more senior agents have kind of been through this before. And based on the contract that's signed, it's kind of clear that they should not be purchasing a home or, you know, they have the flexibility to purchase a home. So, yeah, no, a lot of times, I would say 90% of the times, at least on the NFL side, it's going to be a rental. Miami, a little less so, just because, you know, some of those players might train in the offseason in Miami, whereas most of the players are, you know, going somewhere else after the season ends. Therefore, you know, it's less, they're less inclined to want to be a homeowner in those places. You know, I see way less, you know, inclination to be a homeowner in like a place like Foxborough, Massachusetts, or even, you know, deep in New Jersey where some of the, you know, the Jets players are. And like, you know, those guys are almost always renting, with the exception of if they have, you know, a couple children who want to be enrolled in the schools and they want to have a little more consistency there. But if it's, you know, if it's a single guy in those places, I almost always see renting, no matter what the contract shows.
Nick, a lot of what we do for our athletes and entertainers is make sure that, you know, their financial literacy is intact, that they actually understand, you know, the deals and what's going on and what's in front of them. You mentioned education before. How much of your role working with the players would you say is an educational one, or, you know, somehow teaching them financial literacy? And to that end, you know, how do you see the landscape changing over the last several years and then kind of into the future?
It's very vast. There's lots of education involved. And it's not just, I wouldn't say it's just real estate education, because you got to imagine that when I'm getting introduced is also when the player is moving to a new city. You're not just educating on the actual, you know, nuances of the transaction. You're almost acclimating them to a new climate, new city. It can be a very intimate role because, you know, I might be the first person outside of the team that they ever met. And, you know, to really show them the ropes can be as basic as showing them, taking them to a game, or showing them where the restaurant districts are, or for the golfers, the good golf courses. That's one of my favorite ones. So it's not just education based on the real estate, it's educating them in the city. And with the three markets that I focus on, with New York, Miami, and Boston, they tend to be more higher price point markets from kind of the majority of these professional sports cities. You know, I just had a player that came from the Las Vegas Raiders and was paying, you know, $2,500 a month for a 3-bedroom furnished townhouse, comes to, you know, the Patriots and sees what that same amount of money buys. It's a lot less or what it rents or buys. So there's, unfortunately, there's some education on that side where I have to manage expectations. And sometimes it's not always easy and I feel bad, but there's education on all fronts in that regard.
Especially the three different places, you know, aligning the different seasonality cycles, market temperatures between, you know, three different areas, you know, Miami, New York, and Boston.
Yeah, market temperatures and also physical temperatures as well. Yeah. So they might not have any winter clothes, you know?
Exactly. So exactly.
There's so much education involved. And then speaking of education, it's also the schools and, you know, things that realtors aren't really allowed to talk about is school systems. So that's a whole nother thing to navigate on. But yeah, of course, there's communities that are less diverse than others and different, you know, whether it's the children of the players are older or younger, it's a big difference, because, you know, it might be like sure, it's very easy to find a daycare, but to find a good elementary school that fits and is able to provide the diversity that's needed, or, you know, whatever their special needs of the children are. I mean, that's a whole nother ball game, no pun intended. So every player is so different. Every situation is so different.
Nick, how would you say your relationship with money has changed throughout your career?
I realize how important it is to be consistent, just seeing the inconsistencies of these contracts and how nothing lasts forever. And in my job, I don't have a salary or anything. So being consistent and showing up, and I might get a big check and then not get another check for 6 months. So, you know, you, that big check comes in and you feel like your lifestyle changes a little bit. Oh, okay, maybe I can afford a personal trainer now. Maybe I can buy this thing. Maybe I can go on vacation. And all of a sudden you see that bank account a few months later. You're like, wow, we got to go back to the drawing board here. Like, so just kind of, that was a learning curve, like very early days. And now I feel like I'm getting more consistent and feeling that, hey, that nice commission feels good, but I know it's very temporary. And just tying that into the, you know, a sports contract, sure, you get a nice contract, but, you know, who knows how much is actually guaranteed. You might have four kids to feed. You might be playing with an injury and it could be getting worse. And so just to kind of know that everything's temporary for me has been, you know, an eye opener in terms of, you know, managing finances and being responsible.
Nick, tell me a little bit more about the location. So we've talked about New York, we talked about Boston, we talked about Miami. I think most people, when they think of a realtor, they think kind of one, you know, one city or one place. Tell me how you've kind of expanded into, you know, really three markets and been successful there. What was the, you know, trigger to going into all three, and, you know, what's your relationship to each of them?
I went to college in Florida, and again, that's where I was during the pandemic, and that's where I first, you know, got my real estate license. I moved to New York shortly after college, so that was back in 2011. So I've been in New York, you know, with the exception of the couple years of the pandemic, about 15 years. Both my parents are New Yorkers originally, so I have a lot of family around, a lot of cousins. Both my grandparents were here. My father went to law school in the Boston area and stayed there. It was with the district attorney's office after he graduated. So we were raised, my whole family was based in Boston and in Cambridge, actually. So between growing up in the Boston area, going to school in Florida and pandemicking in Florida, and then moving to New York after, I mean, those are the three markets where I've spent the most time and therefore most know the most people. So like I said, Florida was first. Then I kind of came back to New York when the city started being more like New York again. And then just visiting Boston, I would go home and have conversations with friends and be just, you know, in different rooms. I hear people about, you know, doing all these real estate transactions, asking me for advice and asking if I could help them, and said, no, I'm not licensed in Massachusetts. So, you know, I could refer them to someone, but it seemed just like the natural move for me to get my license there as well. So a little bit crazy taking three different tests, having three different licenses, having three different teams that I work with. I don't recommend it for everybody, but I enjoy it, and I'm very collaborative, and I really enjoy the people I work with who, you know, without my team, my teammates, and having help when I'm not around, I wouldn't be able to, you know, pull off kind of this tri-market real estate business. So yeah, I've always enjoyed team sports more than individual sports. And I'd rather, you know, make three 50% commissions than one 100% commission.
Can you tell us a little bit about what else you're involved in? Any other startups or projects, organizations? How do you kind of, you know, cross over and get a little bit, you know, deeper in the investment space, or, you know, take your real estate transactions to the next level?
You know, I enjoy networking and meeting new people, and you know, I've really leaned into kind of the sports related networking groups and opportunities. And, you know, having New York as my home base has opened a lot of doors, and there's a lot of people based here, obviously, who are in sports. So yeah, no, I've joined a couple different communities that deal with, you know, former athletes and people who work in the sports world and kind of networking through those. And yeah, just meeting a lot of cool people who are also, you know, really into sports or played sports and, you know, who are business leaders now. So just kind of leaning into all these networking opportunities. And then in building up my network, I've been offered some advisory roles at different startups and, you know, even helping out this kind of concert for pro athletes that was at Carnegie Hall, and it's going to be in Miami next week, and helping out, you know, sports tech startups and making a lot of introductions to these companies between whether it's athletes or agents or just kind of people within the sports world, and being able to connect the dots based on my network and the people I know. And I've always enjoyed connecting people. So like, even if there's no money in it, I'll go out of my way just to connect good people with good people, just because I just enjoy it. It when I hear back from them and, you know, they say, oh, that was very helpful, we're going to do this together, like it's just a good feeling for me. And so yeah, I've just naturally enjoyed connecting people, and so therefore I really lean into all these kind of networking opportunities. And at this point, I'm pretty confident that almost whomever I meet, I can at least make some helpful introduction for them.
What are the biggest mistakes that you see people make when they're either looking for, you know, to rent or looking to buy, like, you know, just oversights that they might have when they're, you know, in the house looking process? You know, what mistakes do people make?
Unfortunately, too often we see, you know, players just paying really high rents instead of purchasing a place where they could purchase a place and then sell it for more than they purchased for, like a year later. And just having the sunk cost of paying rent when they could own a place for, you know, not much more money than they're going to end up spending on 2 years, 3 years of rent there. So that's, part of that's can be on the financial advisor, or could also just be based on their financial situation. Maybe they already bought some homes for somebody in their family and they just don't have that liquidity put down on a house. But yeah, no, I mean, I would say just the sunk cost of rent obviously is not anything, as you know, that you can get back. And, you know, having equity in a house is something that you can get back and even will appreciate for you. So paying $20,000 in rent versus owning a place that you could buy for, you know, $2.5 million after a few years, you're out close to $500,000 in rent, and, you know, you could have owned the place and probably sold it for a little more than you bought it. So that is a mistake I do see. Another would be kind of staying at the team hotel forever and like just being very comfortable there, and people might be too, not inclined to get a place on their own. And, you know, team hotel might be a great deal. It might be, you know, between $125, $150 a night, which is a discount based on what the hotel would be for us to stay there. But, you know, after a few months building that up, you're out, a significant amount of money when you could have had a, you know, place to rent for, you know, $3,000 a month. And, you know, even if you had to get rental furniture, it still saves you money based on staying in a hotel for 3 months. So
have you seen any, or do you have any experience with players who have looked at like an in-season living situation as an out-of-season investment situation, like might live there during the season but then look to maybe rent it out outside of the season?
I would say I'm more experienced with the opposite of that, where, you know, they might want to own a place that they can use in the off season and then rent it out in season, you know, especially down in South Florida, where, you know, players that might not play for a South Florida team love training there in the off season. And they want to own a home that will appreciate value, also have some cash flow coming in while they're in season. And then when their season's over, they'll come down there, use it, train for a couple months, and then go back to wherever their team is. So finding that is a whole challenge as well, because those are properties that are Airbnb friendly or short-term rental friendly. Instead of signing a 12-month lease, because then they would never be able to use it, they want to, you know, have that flexibility of using it and coming in when they want, whether it's a bye week or whether it's in the off season for a month or two. So that's a common practice for me, is working with players that want to own a home in South Florida but only want to use it for 2 months of the year and then have a cash flow for them when they're not there.
Yeah, smart. I remember I played with a guy. I'll leave his name out of it, but I remember he early in his career, he bought a place in Nashville, And I remember him coming back every year and kind of explaining, like, yeah, you know, I lived in the house for free because while I'm out here playing, everybody, you know, I Airbnb it out and, you know, people pay for my rent and everything. I'm like, man, that's a good idea. So
one thing I do see a lot of is kind of player to player transactions. Mm-hmm. Some of those don't even hit the open market. So that's a lot of like what kind of having a kind of sports and entertainment kind of niche realtor can provide is knowing the players that are coming in and having a relationship with them and the players going out as well, who might not know them and might not know who's even coming to the team next year. It ends up being a win-win where, you know, the players understand each other. Obviously they're in the same profession. You know, if it's somebody with a big family, it might be hard to find that inventory on the market. So, you know, knowing a player that also has a big family that's on their way out to another team or retiring and wants to sell, that I do see very often, like kind of player to player transactions, and just kind of brokering those deals between the two players can be really fortuitous and opportunistic for these guys who they don't want to deal with listing the house and having a public listing and having just random people coming into their house. They'd much rather just get the deal done and have, you know, a incoming player who understands their life kind of coming in and taking over their house. So you see that on the rental side as well as on the buy side.
When you're meeting a new agent or player for the first time, what separates you from other advisors, real estate advisors? You know, what can they expect?
Like I said, there's just so many nuances involved, and it does take a good amount of experience in going through these transactions, and because so many different things can happen, and just having that, just being numb to the fact that, you know, it could be temporary. Again, like I just mentioned, I spent tons of time with this Yankee player a couple weeks ago and met their family and spent, like, you know, a few days with them, and then all of a sudden a new team and they're heading out, and you know, who knows if I'll ever see them again. Obviously we're a good relationship, but that can happen, and that does happen. And so just being kind of numb to that, whereas most realtors would be like, what the heck, I just spent so much time with that client, like I can't believe this, like, oh man, that was such a waste of time. That, to me, that's just kind of part of the game and part of working with players, and that happens. And you can't help but empathize. So just getting to know these guys and just having that empathy is just so important, because, you know, if you treat them just like every other client, it's not going to make any sense to ever work with them, and you get frustrated very quickly. I do go the extra mile, and just because it's, you know, again, it might be their first time in the city, and there's a lot for them to learn, not just about the real estate, but about the city. And I want them to get settled in and be comfortable. So yeah, I just try to help with whatever I can, whatever, you know, recommendations obviously are very basic. But if you're going to visit a listing and you tell them, oh, I'm bringing the superstar running back of the Miami Dolphins, we're going to see this, all of a sudden you're going to have six different realtors show up. Their cousins, their uncles are going to bring jerseys. They're going to want to take pictures. Like it's really important to kind of be discreet and show that, you know, your professionalism, and even go about signing NDAs if it's necessary, if it's a big enough name. So just kind of having that experience and being professional throughout the whole transaction and protecting these players and these players' families and their agencies from just the kind of the regular, you know, fanfare and things that can get in the way of a transaction. And sometimes you can even use that to your advantage, depending on who the player is, if they're comfortable with it, as opposed to like getting a, you know, special dispensation for a short-term lease. It can actually be beneficial if a landlord, for example, is a big fan of the team, and, you know, you might be able to be creative and get them to agree to terms that they might not agree to, just by, you know, whether it's some tickets or a jersey, or, you know, obviously the player has to be in on it, but you can get creative and get some deals done in that regard if it needs to be done. We don't want to do that, but sometimes it's necessary, and the player always likes saving money as well. So if one jersey will save some money and some peace of mind, then it might do it. So it's kind of having those tricks in your back pocket and having that experience, and and kind of knowing where to go, knowing which landlords, knowing which buildings will be flexible. Because otherwise, you know, you might just be looking at buildings that, you know, will charge an arm and a leg for short-term leases, or in neighborhoods that are gated communities where it takes forever to get improved, or the, you know, the HOAs are crazy, or they people constantly bother you, or if they're renting a place that's also for sale and the landlord doesn't even care about their privacy and just wants to have, you know, showings all the time, and it makes them, you know, feel even cooler that a professional athlete's renting their place, and they up the value, all of a sudden they rent it and then they're selling it for even more than they were selling it for before because the athlete's renting it. So this kind of things I've seen throughout the years in different ways kind of to counter those potential problems.
A lot goes into it, Nick. You've got to be real nimble, real educated. You just have to, you know, learn how to navigate all of it, take it in and deliver it to your clients. And I could tell the way that you build relationships, foster those relationships with your clients, that it's very important, because it's not just a transaction. If a deal goes through or a deal doesn't go through, it's still a connection experience, a person that you've helped, you've met, and you don't know what the future may bring. One last quick question that we like to ask everybody on our podcast is, what does sweat equity mean to you?
Sweat equity, I would say to me, just means like you're in it together, almost like an athlete, you know, sweating on the field and being in the game and on a team, and kind of just you have to, if you want results, you have to be on the field getting those results yourself. At the end of the day, I would say it's about peace of mind, and the way to kind of achieve what you want and to give yourself peace is to, honestly, you have to do it yourself. I mean, you can rely on other people, you can rely on things working out for you, but if you want things done correctly and to give you the most peace of mind, you really have to, it takes some of your own sweat into the deal. So yeah, you can't just rely on other people to achieve, you know, the results that you want. That's one of the, I would say one of the services I do offer is I actually care about the deal being done in a correct way, and I can provide peace of mind to the player or the agent that if they go through me, they're going to get connected either directly to me, or if it's a market that I don't service, whether it's Green Bay or Oklahoma City or Cincinnati, they're going to have peace of mind because I'm actually in on the deal and connecting them to my team there who I've worked with before, who's vetted, who is going to do just as good a job as I would have done.
Nick, thank you again for sharing your journey with us. Really appreciate your insights, your education, and love the way that you just do it all. We wish you all the best, and can't wait to see what else is out there for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.